Welcome to the Zen of Business. My name is Yvonne.
And my name is Shamash.
And we are here to bring you a podcast with a very interesting guest today. The Zen of Business is all about inspiring you to bring more awareness, kindness and wisdom to yourself, your business and to the world. And our guest today is Susie Paisley, and she's really got a wonderful story to tell us. I met her through another friend in Whitstable, where we both live. But when I heard her story, I realised this is not the usual type of textile designer that I have come across, because she's got a background as a conservation biologist. So maybe, Susie, you could start by telling us a little bit about that and how you've come from that journey to what you're doing now.
Yeah, it's hard to sum up, isn't it? All the little circuitous bits of a route through life. But I guess I was always interested in my approach to science was always slightly alarming for my professors, because it was always very emotional and very kind of aesthetic. And my son has recently got slightly told off in his science class for responding emotionally to something that should be, you know, purely empirical, but he gets it naturally from me, because I've always been like that. And I guess I've always loved textiles, and my parents, both on both sides of the family, there's a sort of textile tradition. My father's Scottish, and there was tweeds and weaving and being a tweed merchant on his side of the family. And my mother's side is from the South, the Deep South, North Carolina. And the people are in cotton and hosiery on that side. But more than that, people knitted and they embroidered. And the whole thing of repeating pattern, also because I've lived a lot in Latin America, I used to study spectacled bears, and I've traveled a lot in cloud forests and rainforests and alpine mountainous kind of environments where there's all this wonderful weaving, wonderful embroidery, and I'm just obsessed with it, really, and have always been all about that. So for me, when people say, oh, biology to textile design, that's really weird, and I just sort of think, well, but doesn't everybody have that same that seems really obvious to me.
There's biology in textiles.
It's the fabric of life, and you're looking at ecology and how things interrelate and the patterns in nature, and then, you know, it's obvious you want to do that in textiles, don't you?
So when I first met you, you began to tell me some of the stories about the species that you studied. I do love the story of the bear, so you're going to have to tell us that story. Could you want to tell us a little bit more about your particular, well, the name of your business firstly, but also What is informing these beautiful cloths that you make?
Oh, that's very kind. Well, Newton Paisley is my mother's maiden and married name. And I love the Newton part of it. There's obviously kind of gives scientific resonances of Sir Isaac Newton and various artistic references as well. But also, it ties me into my mother's. My mother passed away right before I started the company, and I was able to tell her that I was doing this. And she'd always kind of, she was a real follow your bliss person. Mm. She was a Quaker and gave me that. And also was very much a sort of, I say it's sort of like, you know, jet fuel inspiration for people that she knew about, just do that thing that you've got inside you to do. So I think she was very pleased to know that the business was named after her, and she saw the logo and the website and things, and died a few months after that. So it's a nice continuity for me on that side of things. In terms of inspiration, you know, always for me, my relationship with science, which is very, very passionate, and it's the same as my religion. When I perceive and learn about the structure and function of nature, for me that is, it's a study of God. And when I was younger, I remember a really seminal moment for me was in a biology class when I was at university, and it was this awful, well, I hope whoever listens to this won't be hearing it, but it was a dreaded class, cell biology. Everybody who wanted to major in biology had to get through this awful thing that people did badly in. And we were learning about the function of a cell, and everybody was learning about all the names and everything like that. And I found that I was inside the cell. I was right there with the mitochondria and the nucleus. All these things were 3D for me and Technicolor. And I aced that class, you know. For me, the experience of it was so much more kind of holistic or something and multidimensional. And my relationship with nature has always been like that. And I feel very sad that when people learn about nature, it's often rather off-putting. And, you know, oh, the gestation period for this creature is, you know, this number of months and, you know, that... It's not really about facts, and it's unfortunate that science is taught in a way where it has to be dry, because in fact, you know, we need to be reconnecting with nature. It's essential to our survival as a species. And so also for me, you know, ecology really is about patterns. And so any perception of those kinds of things is very easy to turn into a visual representation of a repeating pattern. And I find them very... very calming and very engaging, just the contemplation of visual pattern. I think that goes back through spiritual traditions, various spiritual traditions as well. But for me personally, like Joseph Frank, the marvelous textile designer, said that he personally found contemplation of a monochrome wall or something very anxiety provoking, and pattern he found calming, and it, and that's me all over. I love a complex environment. It reminds me of nature and, you know, abundance and patterns of things. It's like about a foraging, a foraging perception that you have as a primate, where, you know, you're looking for patterns. Where is the fruit going to be? Where are the nuts and the hard mast? And where is there a train of insects that I can go? That's all hardwired into us for abundance and, you know, our sources of food and stuff. So... yeah, the science is all interwoven with the
One of the things that I remember seeing when I first met you was these absolutely stunning notebooks, and you said to me, oh, these are my proper observational notebooks. And I'm thinking, my goodness, if my textile students could have possibly have drawn anything quite as beautiful, I'd have been so happy. So do you want to tell us a little bit what it was like being in the forest with the bears and looking for them, and what was your life like there, and how did you use your notebooks? And
well, it was a, it was an unusual time in a modern life, because I lived several days away from anything that most people would call, you know, civilization. There was a village which was a full day's walk for me from my, well, first I lived in a cave and with a little tent next to it. And then I had, later I constructed a small 3x4 meter hut out of wood and local, you know, straw and strips of rawhide and stuff. And the, a local herder helped me build that hut. And that was a wonderful place to live. You know, no windows, so the clouds that came bowling up the valley would bowl into the house. You'd actually not really be able to see your hand at the end of your arm, because the cloud, it's like when you fly into a plane. You're up at sort of 13,000 feet above sea level, so it's like that, that kind of experience of being in a plane in terms of the cloud. So there were no people, I had no phone, I had no sources of sort of communication with people. And so it was a very monastic type of life. And because also sometimes for large parts of the year and the day, you would have all your distance vision knocked out. I found myself really studying very closely the things that were to hand, and really studying them and getting a lot of sort of very deep pleasure out of the patterns. So I drew them and collected them. I had a flower press and was always bringing things home every evening and really contemplating them for a long time. You know, I had a cassette tape. I used to send tapes back and forth with the man who's now my husband and my godparents and my dad, and so I would re-listen to those tapes of people going about their normal business and stuff. But I didn't have any other human contact for months at a time sometimes. So, yeah, quite an unusual experience to have.
It's a bit like being, like, you know, both Shamash and I are very interested in different Zen masters, and most of them spend a lot of time in this form of retreat, solitude, to reflect on life and the beauty of it. And it sounds sort of that you've been practicing Zen up there inside of your cave or in your hut. And, you know, one of the things that interests me, Susie, is that, you know, when I look at your fabrics, they are full of detail of these interesting creatures, plants and flowers. And I need you to tell our listeners, because we haven't really got vision here, a little bit about how you came to put these collections of things together. I mean, you've got one called the Carolina Tree of Life. I can't remember them, although I can see them in my mind. Maybe do you want to tell us a little bit about how you went from these drawings up in the forest to making these wonderful fabrics?
Well, it was really lovely, actually. The one that I did that I call Medidi Clouds, the national park it is now where I used to work, is now considered one of the most biodiverse protected areas in the world, full of extraordinary creatures. And I used to draw them when I was there. And once I'd started Newton Paisley, I guess third or so collection that I did, I actually used a lot of the illustrations that I'd done in the cloud forest in that design. When I did the Carolina Tree of Life, that was when my mother, who was from North Carolina, was dying, and I was looking at species that were from that environment and from the two Carolinas. They are the sort of hotbed of all many carnivorous species, like the Venus flytrap, probably the most famous one. That's only found, only native to there. There are a lot of other really strange and unusual, marvelous creatures and plants. So my process of designing something is really, it's me being allowed to do what I used to want to do as a scientist, which was just kind of follow my heart as I pursued interest in an area, which you can't really do as a scientist. Mm-hmm. I mean, in fact, when people choose what species to study, they do have a quick look through guidebooks often and think, well, oh, rather fancy, I want a golden glider or whatever. And then, you know, find a reason to justify that in terms of the scientific questions you might be able to answer thereby.
Yeah.
But in fact, there is always a little bit of an affinity that you might have with what you choose. But with the textile design, of course, there's no constraints to all of that. So I look at stories that are engaging to me in various different ways. And I want to be able to, a big part of why I do the textile design is to communicate. Because I figure that if people are spending thousands of hours contemplating a set of curtains, I mean, granted, they're not just sitting there thinking about them the whole time, but you do, you know, sit there and they're there and, you know, you do get used to, and you do sort of have thoughts about your various patterns that, you know, you see. Why not have it be real amazing stories about real life stuff that needs saving? So in the process of thinking about those things, I like that the narrative is a part of what comes into it. What conservation related story can I tell by including that I couldn't if I didn't? So there's a sort of weird set of columns that I have when I'm choosing what to include. Looks, I have to admit, is one, because if it, a lot of things in nature look like LBJ's little brown jobs, and you can't have too many LBJ's in your picture. It's also like, is it going to freak people out? Because things like bats and scorpions and spiders and stuff, not too popular for your average curtain buying public. But then there's also the kind of stories that are like, I just did a design this summer all about Mexico, where I used to live, which is a country I absolutely love. And they have this incredible abundance of different species of cacti, about a third or so of the world's diversity of cacti are found in Mexico. And many weird endemic species. And that was just fantastic because I didn't really know that much about them. And it was really, really interesting to go in deeply. And I had help from this marvelous woman who's the head of the IUCN specialist group for cacti, Barbara Gertz, who is Mexican. And she helped point me at different species to look at, because it's a group that really needs conservation attention very, very urgently. So it was great to engage with that. But I mean, I found out about things like the creeping devil, which is a species of cactus that actually makes its way across the desert floor.
Wow. Oh my God.
That's got all the spikes on it as well.
Oh,
makes it devilish.
Completely.
Really?
It clones itself. It's like this trick.
Wow.
But there's also this very critically endangered species of cactus that we got to go and look for when we were in southern Mexico with my family. I hadn't been back for 25 years, and my daughter was named after Doña Beatriz Mijangos, who was 85, and we went and she met her, and we got to go on horseback, and we actually found this species that we that is so endangered. We found it out, and people didn't know really where to look for it and stuff. So that was a great adventure. I don't always get to do that. I wish I could always go, I fancy, you know, Western Ghats. I'm going to London. Somebody would like to pay for me to do that. I'd really love to be able to do that for all my designs.
So I think one of the things that, you know, is really interesting, a lot of the people that I mentor are very, very creative, like yourself, Susie, but there comes a point when you've got to be able to sell these lovely things. So do you want to tell us a little bit more about your business journey, what you've been doing in order to bring all this lovely, important sort of thinking, scientific thinking through a fabric, but how are you getting that now out to your customers? What have you had to do in to create it into a business?
A lot of the answer to that question, I think, is I've tied myself in knots and done real mental contortions to try and get myself in the mindset of somebody who has a business, because this is not what I've done. And the technical side of learning how to do textile design, learning how to put things into repeat in Photoshop, working with all the suppliers to figure out who had the most environmentally friendly production systems, and, you know, who I could afford to work with in terms of minimum orders, and all that has been a huge learning curve. And then there's this whole side that you're asking about actually selling it to people. And it hasn't been easy for me, isn't easy for me psychologically, that putting myself in that position of someone who is selling it. And I think in essence, the answer to the question is I have to ask for help. I have a marvelous woman who's had a business before called Lorna Pugh, who's a florist by training, and she's had a small business and knows a lot that I don't know, and she's been helping me. You've helped me. Other people like Margot Selby, who have businesses, have been mentors and friends and helped me sort of get my head around the idea of what it means to try and sell things. Because as you hear me talking about what I do, my passion is very much in the making, as I think is often the case, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
But the buzz that you get from actually selling things to people and seeing in their homes and in their lives, and when they tell you how they use it and how they're responding to it, is overwhelming. Mm. It's actually really, really lovely. And so that obviously feeds your desire to get back out there and go meet people. And I do a big trade show, which is a lot of effort and money every year, Decorex in London, which I've just finished. And I've just launched all my designs, all of them as wallpapers, in addition to the fabrics, which was my first love. And it's been a big journey, very technical, but actually it's marvelous seeing them as wallpaper. Yeah, I didn't really expect to love it as much as I do. Right now I'm trying to, because I only really started last September, so it is really early days for me. And I'm now working very hard to try and get some more press coverage by means of magazines, and I need to have photo shoots in my home and in other places. So that's the journey I'm on at the moment, to try and start to get a little bit more publicity for it.
So I'm really enjoying this conversation, and I've only just met you today, and I'm a really passionate scientist, and it's really interesting to hear how you've gone from this angle of particularly biology and the environment and science, and you've took that passion and created this creative work that you do, and now more recently trying to make it into something that becomes a business. And I think a lot of our listeners maybe leaning to that side of being very creative and creating all this great stuff, and like you, feeling very awkward about selling it. And yet it's so interesting to hear that you felt so good when people actually purchased it. So there is part of the business element that you like when people actually purchase it.
Oh, yeah.
But there's some middle element that you don't like in the actual selling process, perhaps, or something else. So I'd be interested in what kind of processes went in your mind for you to be able to think, actually, yes, I do need to make this into a business. And also, I'm willing to actually ask for help. So I'd be really interested in that element.
Yes. I mean, for one thing, I have built into my business model that I'm giving money to a charity called World Land Trust. So for every meter of fabric that I sell and every roll of wallpaper, they're able to conserve 100 square meters of wild habitat. So the fact that, you know, I'm doing that really helps me to feel really passionate about selling. I think perhaps I lead with it too much when I talk to people about my business. I lead with the science and I lead with the conservation stuff, whereas I sell at quite a high, not high price point, but it's certainly not, you know, great volumes. And so I think people, in terms of the luxury, I don't know if it comes across a bit strangely that I'm all about that side of things, but I do sort of think that there's an awful lot of pattern out there and a lot of amazing artists that make beautiful pattern. And I sort of think that people would like my authentic passion, which is I am really excited about the science and about conserving the land. So I always kind of think, well, don't hide who you are too much. In terms of learning how to do it and that sort of transition, it's about, for me, I guess a lot of it's been about asking for help. And it is just really exciting when it all starts to come together. I mean, I've just been in the process right now with the wallpaper of struggling through all of the technical aspects of it and the pricing and all that kind of thing. And I'm just now getting my first orders coming through. And my goodness, doesn't it become easier once you've done all that, you've made all those so many decisions, and then you've got your pricing and you've got your, everything's done, and suddenly it's selling. I mean, many people who might be listening might have to make everything afresh, in which case it's a slightly different business model. But for me, I'm entering a new phase now of, okay, I've invested so much in that, and now people can start to enjoy it, and I can start to just go and talk to people about it and sell it. And kind of freeing and wonderful. And there's also a great kind of buzz to just the communication that you have with people about it when they love things, because they're certainly not buying it if they don't love it. So you get big love ups, you know.
It's a proof, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a real, like, they're not just saying they like it, they're actually putting their money down, they're actually putting it up.
That was what really appealed to me, actually, about being in business when I was a scientist and a sort of NGO type person that was always begging for money from people. And it was always about, you know, the written word and your SMART objectives and, you know, how you were itemizing your budget and all that kind of thing. I love the directness of making something that is either beautiful enough for somebody to part with their hard-earned money for, or it isn't. There's no negotiation. Yeah. There's no who you know and, you know, fudging it around the edges and begging and all that. It's just a very straightforward thing. It's either good enough for it or it isn't. And I love that. That's very kind of liberating after a long time in the world of waffle.
It's very tangible, isn't it, when you've got a fabric, you've got a wallpaper. And I think, you know, you sell not only to individuals, but to people who do hotels and other things. And I think what's going to be really interesting to see some of those public spaces with your work in. And let's hope that people do ask, because what I notice about is that, you know, there's one beautiful one, it's got some sort of strange beast in it. I remember asking, what is that beast? And you give me the story. And then there's one with the bears and they look like they've got glasses on. These fabrics and these wallpapers, they're very engaging. And I think what's exciting is that there is a real story, because lots of people just use pattern willy-nilly. They put, you know, badges in with, you know, tigers and the things that don't relate to it. But yours are a real story. And I think part of the zen of business journey is about things being real and being tangible and being compassionate. And so we're hearing about the passion you have for these things, but the fact that you care deeply. And to me, that's one of the most interesting things about this. Not just that they are beautiful, but that you care about the environment, you care about the species, and therefore you're, through an unusual means, we might say, actually telling the story of those species. And I think that's very interesting.
It's funny, you've zeroed right in on the very essence of it. And it was actually a comment that my mum made very, very close to the end of her life. She said, is this wonderful, your idea about this? And she said, about telling the stories about all these species, and but don't forget to actually tell the story. And I haven't yet. This is a real central kind of missing piece for me still. And I hope in the next 6 to 8 months to have really identified my medium for telling the stories. Mm-hmm. Because I what my plan is at the moment, and I've done some mock-ups of this, is a field guide to every design so that you can actually, you know, have it there as a little artifact that tells you, I forget, what is that thing? Oh, that's crested cowweed. And look, it says here that it's a parasitic species, but it's brilliant for breaking up or whatever. You know, the details will be there to hand if you want them. I'm just trying to find the right, you know, artisanal publisher to help me do the little beautiful book that will go with it. But it is about that telling the story. And I haven't quite got that physical manifestation today, but I will soon. It's definitely the next thing.
Sorry,
I was just going to ask, do you share your personal story and your personal journey, like on your website and places like that?
Maybe not enough. Yeah. I think not enough. I mean, it's early days for me in terms of trying to get, you know, some coverage about it in, you know, magazines and that sort of thing. And I guess, but on my website, I don't think there's really probably enough about it. But it's people, you know, are funny because, like, you know, I have a PhD and at first I was used to using that. And then people are like, oh, no, people don't want to hear that, because then they will think, well, she's only dabbling in this textile stuff until she goes back to her day job. And then, you know, other people. So it's funny in terms of how you present yourself and how much of the information you give about who you are and where you're coming from. But I think all that gets a bit easier when you've been doing it a while and people see you've been around and that you're not going anywhere. And I'm not going anywhere. I'm absolutely determined that this is going to work somehow.
Wow.
And I was very moved, Susie, where you said, you know, that you know, you named your business after your mother, who's now passed away. I know she was a great activist and she's a great passionate person for causes and issues in the world. But I'm really wanting to ask you this question. So, you know, we have listeners who probably, you know, have got passions and desires, things they really want to do. What advice would you give them? What tips would you give them in a way that, like the way that your mum gave you some advice?
Well, I feel it's sort of unfair to say that anybody can launch their own business without having a little bit of financial support to do it. I think it's sort of disingenuous to say that, because I have been supported by my partner financially. We've had a young child, I've been helping raise the young child and stuff, but I stopped my university earning several years ago, and I, you know, have yet to really pick up my side of things within the family. And I think it's unfair to say if you're working full shifts at Sainsbury's that you will have as easy a time in putting a lot of time and energy into starting a business. So I do feel that a disclaimer on that front is worth making, because, you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, people who are from more disadvantaged backgrounds have more of a struggle. It's not to say you can't do it, but it is worth recognizing it's helpful if you've got some time and space within your home. If you're having to make a little tiny space on the kitchen table, that's harder. All these practical things really do factor into the struggle that you have to start a business. And it's a struggle even when you're not needing to put food on the table and you've got a space in your house. So having said that, I do know a lot of people, an amazing woman who started a business called Cocoon Home, also doing textile design. She was my next door neighbor at Decorex. She's been working for 10 years to launch her business and supporting herself as a seamstress and doing, you know, full-time work, building up to the point where she could launch a business. And I think she's going to do great.
Mm.
And people do amazing things when they've got a vision. And they can get it clear in their mind what it is they want to do. And my sort of metaphorical description of what that process is like, and this is weird, but this is how I see it, it's like an onion. It's like peeling an onion. You've got layers of extraneous stuff in your life, and you're peeling down until you get to this really shiny white, tight, beautiful center part that is what you're meant to do. And it's a peeling process for me, you know. I like that, but I don't think that's part of it. I like that, but I don't think that's part of it. What is the vision? What exactly is the nugget? to quote my friend Yvonne Fuchs, what is the difference that makes your business really different? Yeah. Finding that thing that is sort of the essential. And it, another sort of metaphorical description for me was like chucking everything that I love into like a pestle and mortar and pestle and sort of grinding and then sort of seeing what that tastes like. And if you've got an ingredient there that you don't need, then you take it out until you get to a really magic mixture, which I hope that now with my business, it's, you know, I was interested in working with children and I had various sort of, I was doing it as a social enterprise at first and I had extra bits in that just didn't make the right paste. It wasn't, it just was too complicated. And so I guess those things, trying to support yourself to do it, trying to just whittle it down. And then you just have to believe and go for it and not be intimidated, because we can all learn everything we need to know on the internet these days. The stuff, you know, how do you make your own website? Well, you ask Google, how do I do this? And it tells you. You ask other people that you know. And you know, in your hours that you have, if you are working full time, if you don't watch TV, which I, you know, don't, and you don't have a lot of those very time-consuming habits, you do find there's time when you can pursue it. And it's more fulfilling, really. I had this one other thing that I was imagining saying to you guys, which is to do with kind of mindfulness. And I do have an interesting observation about that.
Go for it.
Which is just to say that I've noticed, because I don't particularly have a discipline of haven't had a, although I've been a Quaker, so I sit in silence quite happily. And But I have found it essential to me increasingly since I've started this business, because we were talking about the awkwardness of trying to do all this numerical stuff and the business stuff and that, which doesn't really come very naturally. I've found lately that if you think of it as kind of a right brain and a left brain thing, you've got all your kind of creative stuff going on. And what I need to do is sometimes I need to work. I'm working on a wonderful design today on the train. And that was great because it was just separate time and I was drawing. But sometimes an email will come in or somebody will phone you and they want to have a discussion about something to do with the numbers or you know, some technical aspect or something. And then I find it really screamy and sort of crunchy and horrible to go back into doing the creative stuff. I find that awkward. And I've discovered that it's almost like a clutch in a car. If I sit and meditate for 5 or 10 minutes, I can get back.
Mm.
Wow.
It's really just useful.
That's really fascinating.
That is fascinating. Yeah. I think you'll have to put some of this into your course now, Shamash. Shamash course teaches mindfulness. And I think for a lot of creatives, they find that actually they need to have that deep silence to think and to connect to their own creativity so that they can do it. Because you can't be doing... I mean, I've sort of given up multitasking now. I'm sort of into monotasking because I realise that actually I need to do it.
Yeah,
I'm much more connected when I do.
It's painful sometimes, really, quite honestly, trying to do the two at the same time, and you can start to feel really unhappy and kind of fractured and stuff. And I don't meditate as much as I think I should, but when I get desperate and I'm really frustrated, I do it.
Yeah.
And I find, I'm okay. It's the creative stuff has come back and I'm not stressed from that discontinuity, whatever you call it, between the two bits of having the creative business. So
Now that's really interesting. I'm quite curious. So you've given an example of where you'd use it, where if, you know, someone calls you up for something technical and it helps you tune back into your creative side. But I'm particularly interested in the self-care and the self-compassion element of mindfulness and meditation and other practices too. So do you use it for that reason, or do you have other practices that you do to keep your sanity from the busyness of running a business?
Well, I've always been a runner, and I run in the woods pretty much every morning with the dog, or a walk in the woods, and that's really wonderful. We live near the ancient forest of Blean, and it's just so beautiful. So that's a huge... And walking by the sea is lovely.
Yeah.
I've recently started doing the 5 Tibetan rites.
Oh.
Which I'm sure you... Do you know about them?
No, I'd love to.
Tell us more about
it. Oh, it's just divine. I'm not an expert on it at all, but it long predates yoga. And it's 5 exercises that are supposed to lead to great sort of longevity. And I have one of the most extraordinary people I know is called Deirdre Nettleton. And she's, I don't know how old Deirdre is, late 80s. And she's been doing the Five Tibetan Rites for decades and decades. And she'd mentioned it to me before. And I, because the first one is spinning. And I think I got to the wrong thing when I Googled it. And I was like, you do like a whirling dervish thing? I don't, that does not appeal at all. But then I saw her recently. I always stay with them when I do Decorex in London. And it's such a happy time for me staying in this house where I used to live as a child and with them. And they're such amazing people. But anyway, I got back into it, looked it up again and have started to practice that every day. And it's really wonderful. It's a bit of a salutation, sun salutation type thing, combined with a few other exercises. And there's five of them, and you do them in repetitions, 3, 6, 9,
okay.
So on. It's just a stillness thing the first part of the day. But I think it, according to the what wisdom of the ages, it's got other benefits, which I wouldn't begin to want to talk about to you guys.
But I think it's fantastic that you found, because of I'm into the mindfulness and the meditation and the compassion practices, but I'm always interested in what works for each person, because each person's different. And so, for you, being in the woods is fantastic, and running in the woods, and some meditation from time to time works for you, and then these Tibetan rites that you've experimented with seems to be working for you at the moment.
Yeah.
And I think these little practices that we have in our life, they're really, really important. I think they're at the core of, they're certainly the core of what we want to talk about in Zen and business, because if we don't take care of ourselves, then it's so easy to burn out. Because I can see you're such a kind and compassionate person. With every sale that you want to make sure it goes back to, conservation directly. And so you're so passionate about that. You say that, do you want to conserve the environment? By the way, you'll also get some of my product as well. So you're really, really keen to share that. And I think for a lot of the kind of people that we'll be interviewing, the tendency would be more moving towards that. And I'm very curious, okay, so what are you doing to look after yourself too? And then that gets people thinking. But
I think it's lovely also to think of those things as sources of pleasure and joy. Mm. And hopefully when you get your business in the right space, it's so pleasurable. Mm. And there's so much joy that comes from it. And I think many people think of meditation as a sort of chore and almost a bit tedious. But in fact, it really is a pleasure.
Yeah.
And once you realise that it's a treat like eating a chocolate bar, then you... Exactly. Then you build it into your life. You just have to recognize how pleasurable it is.
Exactly. It's not a discipline to eat chocolate. Yeah. It comes very naturally to me.
Yeah.
It's the same with meditation. I think it's beautiful. It's exactly what I say to these people too. It's a joy. And being in the woods is a joy. And being in some stillness and finding some peace of mind is, if we can start finding joy in that, then we're in creating a positive cycle for ourselves, because we're nourishing ourselves. We're enjoying nourishing ourselves. And I think that's really important for the business too, because it would nourish that as well. It kind of filters outwards.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, it's brilliant that you're spreading all that good stuff. Well done, you guys.
Thanks.
Yeah. And it's been such an amazing journey to watch you through, meeting you probably right at the time you had the social enterprise and you were thinking about it. And then to see this immense refinement and come more and more and more and more refined and more focused and visually much more cohesive. And it's a little book that I wrote, which a lot of my clients have used, called What's the Difference That Makes the Difference. And I think the thing that I want to say about you, Susie, is that it is this unbelievable care, compassion for the environment, for species, that you have completely embodied. And then how wonderful that you then put them into fabric of all purpose for us all to enjoy. And I really, really, really hope you get to make this book, because I, for one, really want to read it, because I really want to understand these species. And we're so really delighted that you came on the show with us.
Thank you. It's been lovely to talk to you both. I think it's a wonderful topic and so important.
Thank you. Beautiful. It's great having you.
Thank you.